Coming up, we got Dan Titus talking about the NBA Finals, the Kevin Durant news, Jaylen Brown surgery, I guess some fake KD trades. We talked about a whole bunch. That's all coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We just watched an awesome NBA Finals game. Pacers beat the Thunder to go up 2-1 in the series. To discuss it all, Dan Titus from Yahoo Sports. Dan, how you doing?
KOC, what's happening, man?
I'm doing great, man. That was an awesome game today. Let's start off with some of my thoughts. I want to get your feedback here, Dan, on what we saw tonight. Number one thought on my mind. Are the Pacers doing to OKC what they've done to everybody else throughout the postseason, wearing you down with constant cuts, endless energy, constant intensity? Because I'll tell you what, like OKC, I felt like was tired in that fourth quarter after everything Indiana has been throwing at them, and they've been doing that against everybody. So my question for you, Dan, is has Indiana actually become the favorite here in the finals? Have they actually taken full control after being such heavy underdogs against OKC?
Let's pump the brakes a little bit here. The Thunder have gone 5-0 after a loss in the postseason. So that's saying I'm not panicking yet. However, we got to take the Indiana Pacers seriously. And if you haven't yet, they've shown us three series before that they are for real. And now that they're in the NBA Finals, the way that they turned over the Oklahoma City Thunder tonight, I mean, a record for the postseason this year for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They just looked like they were all out of sorts. And there were moments where I thought that they were, okay, this is OKC. They're going to settle down. They're gonna be able to push through this. But it was just punch after punch. The Indiana Pacers just didn't let up. And shout out to Benedict Mathurin for having this is the game of his life tonight. So it was just amazing to watch. And it's just great to watch. Like everyone was just – Thunder going to blow them out. This series is going to be over. No, Indiana Pacers had a different story to tell.
That's the thing, Dan. I mean, I picked the Thunder in five. That is now an impossible result. And everybody and their mother in NBA media picked the Thunder in five. Okay, so like
I had that Thunder in six, happen. But yeah, we're in the same boat.
So you can still be right here, but everybody else wrong. Okay, and so with Indiana, they proved me wrong during the regular season. I thought they're just league pass darlings. They're a fun team to watch. Oh, like nice story. And then they get stomped in the postseason. Wrong. I picked the Bucks against them. Wrong. Picked the Cavs. Wrong. Picked the Knicks. Wrong. I've been wrong every single round about the Pacers. And I picked the Thunder to win the series too. So here's the thing, Dan, right? I watched this game tonight. Obviously, we're all watching this game. Appreciate everybody in the live chat on YouTube, X, Facebook and TikTok as well. Thanks for watching us live. Everybody here watched this game live. I felt I had flashbacks to the other rounds where it's like you saw the Bucks get worn down in round one. You saw the Cavs get worn down in round two. Kenny Atkinson harped on that after the game about the difference in intensity level and focus levels and force. He talked about it happened to the Knicks, a team that is, you know, renowned for its toughness and its grit, but the Pacers were tougher. And now, like it feels like it's happening against the Thunder, at least in this particular game at home in Indiana on this particular night of game three, where it's like that fourth quarter, man, the Thunder looks like slow to me. They weren't boxing out. They weren't playing with intensity. Indiana was, just like they do in minute one of a game, they were doing it in minute 40 and minute 41 all the way to minute 48. And that's where I'm just thinking to myself, is that what makes this team so special and what could end up leading them to hoisting that Larry O'Brien trophy? I don't think it's unreasonable to think that after we've been so wrong so many times, Dan, with them. This is who they are, and they're doing it again.
They're a team of resiliency. And yeah, I didn't think that they're going to win this game, but I think that this game was actually won in the second quarter. I mean, the 30-11, I think, was the way that it ended. And that was really where Benedict Mathurin and TJ McConnell, the unsung hero that's going to be of the series, apparently, where the momentum really swung. And I feel like the Thunder were kind of off balance ever since then. Like, they were playing well in the third quarter, but I feel like that was the energy and the spark that, like, yo, Indiana, I think we got them here. And you've been talking about it for the last, like, week and a half. It's like, when is Tyrese Haliburton going to be aggressive from the outset? And he was this game. And now the Pacers go to 20-1 when he drops at least 20 points and 10 assists in a game this year. They were just firing on all cylinders. And I think it's the other aspect of it that I think that I kind of downgraded or didn't expect was Miles Turner. He was kind of getting torched in the first half by Chet Holmgren. He was going at him almost what seemed like every play in the paint. He was getting fouls. But in that fourth quarter, Miles Turner turned it up into a whole different level. Like, that's what's going to get this guy paid and back in Indiana this year. And his defense in the fourth quarter was amazing. TJ McConnell's hustle in the third quarter and as well as the second quarter. This team just has this it factor that I don't know that we can even quantify at this point, because Haliburton's doing things that people have never done in the postseason in the clutch. Maybe this is just their moment, dude. Like, it's hard to even explain it at this point, other than I still feel like this is probably a knee-jerk reaction. The Thunder are going to respond well in game four.
Sure. I mean, you gave out the stat earlier, 5-0 after a loss in the postseason. So, yes, you're not going to rule out a 68-win team that's here in the NBA Finals. You're not going to rule out the Thunder. But some of the things you said in there are also on my mind. Turner is one of those things, because with Miles Turner, you look at the box score. You see Chet Holmgren with what he did. You see Chet, 20 points. He was at a solid game overall. He was attacking him in the first half, like you said. Turner, 9 points, 3 of 11. It's like, oh, not a great night for Turner. Yeah, he had some blocks. But if you're just looking at the box score, you don't think it was a big win for Turner. But I thought Turner just absolutely sunned Chet Holmgren in that fourth quarter, man. There were so many possessions. There was a play where Turner rolled hard to the basket, just nudged Chet out of the way, showed how skinny and lean he is, pushed him away from the basket and scored. Then he blocked him on the other end of the play after that. Multiple times it felt like he just overpowered him. And Chet has got to be better in the series. It just straight up, Chet looks unready to me for this stage in so many moments. And then in other moments, he's doing crazy stuff. He's attacking closeouts and showing off his handle, but it's so inconsistent that the youth of Chet Holmgren, I think, is showing on this young OKC team more than anybody. Whereas Turner, yes, not the best first half, but he was awesome in the second half. And this speaks to my earlier point, though, man. Like, Indiana's closing games at such a high level because they're able to sustain that energy. It's like in football, like, you win the line of scrimmage. Sometimes a team has their offensive line dominates the first half. They're worn out. And then the defensive line and the linebackers are winning the line of scrimmage in the second half and the fourth quarter of games. That's what it feels like with Indiana, where it's like, they just don't stop the energy. They don't stop. Turner included, TJ McConnell, the interception, the inbound pass that he intercepted from Caruso.
Woo! That was
what a moment.
I love that you put the NFL reference in there, because that was immediately what I thought. I was like, yo, that interception where he just extended out, man. Like, that was one of those momentum swinging plays where I'm like, those are the intangibles that win you an NBA Finals and playoff games. And the Pacers continue to have those moments. And, man, I just got to sing the praises about the Pacers, man. And, like, so at what point – so this is where I think you're right about maybe the Thunder haven't – they don't have the legs, or they're getting tired by the fourth quarter. Just looking at the bench disparity here, 49 bench points to 18 for the Thunder. The Thunder have been one of the deepest teams all year long, been relying on their bench. I mean, look at game two where Aaron Wiggins goes off. They didn't get much. Isaiah Joe gave him a little something. Isaiah Hartenstein off the bench has not really been productive in his minutes. He keeps on getting run off the court because of foul trouble. Maybe that's where we've all been underrating, is like, when the Pacers bench is on, what do you do? Because the swings of this game to me were really just about the bench, and led by, as we talked about before, Benedict Mathurin and TJ McConnell. But you're still getting solid minutes out of Ben Shepherd, who's playing good defense against SGA and having those moments against Jalen Williams, who before this game has been struggling, shooting 33% from the field before coming to this game. So you know, I think that they're just pushing the right buttons to give this team enough of an edge to kind of push forward here. So, yeah, I think this series has got to go at least 6 or 7. Which way? I guess we'll see.
Well, Mather and McConnell looked like Scotty and MJ tonight off the bench for the Pacers. They were awesome. McConnell, 10 points, 5 assists, 5 steals, and just constant energy on the floor, getting into the paint at will, playing paint to great, as Caitlin Cooper had her on my podcast earlier this week, the excellent Pacers podcaster, and she described awesome. The paint to great style, and that's what Indiana went towards, and Mathurin was a part of that as well, because, dude, I'll tell you what, man, Benedict Mathurin, I felt like this is who Indiana imagined when they drafted him. And we've seen him do this during the regular season, but just the constant cuts to the basket, timely cuts, getting into the lane, the brutal downhill drives, drawing fouls as well. Some of the nasty pull-ups he had, the intense defense. Like this is who the Pacers hoped to get when they drafted him with the 6th pick a handful of years ago. This is the guy that they decided to keep despite trade rumors over the years. This is the version of Benedict Mathurin that they were hoping for. And to get 27 points in the first game Indiana in the finals in over 20 years, unbelievable for him to do this as another homegrown player, and is again showing the importance of continuity for this team. It's a theme for the Pacers and for the Thunder, but for Mathurin to have a night like this off the bench for them, I don't know whether to call it the TJ McConnell game or the Benedict Mathurin game. The truth is, it's really the depth game. Like it's the depth game. It's just the whole of this Pacers team and Mathurin and McConnell being part of that. Those guys were awesome, Dan.
Yeah, I guess we could call it the Arizona game.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But yeah, all season long,
are just saying, come on, make that connection. You did it. Thank you.
But Ben Mathurin, man, like I can't help but think of everything that Jonathan Kuminga has gone through with the Warriors and the way he's been benched. He starts, doesn't really seem to be in favor. Ben Mathurin kind of figured out like what it's going to take to actually get meaningful minutes from Rick Carlisle. He needed to lock in on defense and he needed to know when to pick his spots. And it's very interesting that there's these moments that Mathurin just takes over the game. And the one way he always does it is, you were talking about it, the way he slashes and gets downhill. He had 8 free throw attempts. Like, that's star quality. Like, that's the only other person that had more than that was Chet and, what, Jalen Williams, I think. So at that point, and of course, SGA is going to be up there. No, he didn't even have it. He only had 6. So the fact that he's putting that much pressure on a Thunder defense, that's an X factor that I don't think many people accounted for. Because the Thunder is just so disruptive and they're always having their hands in every possession. But like, he just has that strength and the ability to get to the rim, get to the line, shoot 3-pointers. And Obi Toppin, we didn't really talk about him either, but like, I think he's just been giving this. I don't know. Was that the perfect Pacers game, I guess, or summing this up to be? Because it seemed like everybody kind of stepped up in their own way to kind of push them over the top, which makes me think that, all right, let's go back to reality. Can they do this again and do it one more time to close out this series? I think it's going to be a little bit more harder to do, but I'm curious to know, what do you think the Thunder go from here? What adjustments can they make to either limit the bench or just maybe the impact of the bench?
Yeah, you know, I will see what OKC ends up actually doing. They always make adjustments. It feels like Dagnall always saves his best for closeout games. We saw what they did against Jokic with putting Caruso on him and playing a swarming defense. We saw what they did against Ant in the closeout against Minnesota. So I'm sure he's gonna have something for Halliburton or, you know, the bench unit or whoever it might be, or for his own guys. But I think they might have been a little surprised by an Indiana adjustment in this game, because the Pacers took a playoff low percentage of 3-pointers in this game. They for the game, they only took 27 3-pointers. They made just 9 of them, but only 29% of their shot attempts were 3-pointers. That is a playoff low, and it was a series low, because throughout this series, in the game one, the Pacers took 44% of their shots from three. In game two, they took 43% of their shots from three. And then in game three, as I said, only 29% of their shots. They were getting to the basket more often. They were getting to the mid-range more often as well. 41% of their shots came from mid-range. And was this just coincidence? Was this just the way the game played out? I don't think so, because you saw the way Indiana went to Siakam early in the game, feeding him over and over, using his size advantage. In the second half especially, you saw Turner rolling rather than pick and popping on the screens for Tyrese Haliburton. That A, gave Haliburton more space to operate outside, which got him some threes, but also got Turner some quality rolls to the basket, including the play where he just shoved Holmgren out of the way and scored inside. So I think Indiana was cutting more often too. We don't have the data since we're recording this live right after the game, but it seemed to me that they were just attacking the paint more and more and more and more, and showed a willingness to use the mid-range more. And so OKC, you know, on paper, you're happy to allow, you know, mid-range jumpers compared to threes, running people off the three-point line. But I think Indiana said what I've been hoping for all series, like, utilize the mid-range. You got, like, too many elite mid-range shooters, like Nembhard, Haliburton, Siakam. Those guys are great mid-range players. And I felt like they did a hell of a job using it in this game, and that opened up a lot of things for them in the half court that they otherwise didn't have in games one and two.
That's very interesting. I'm trying to think of the so Nembhard, I thought that he kind of started off slow. Like, he had like an uncharacteristic three turnovers when it first started, but I did notice that there was a concerted effort to get Pascal Siakam in any mismatch possible. He hit like three fadeaways early on in the game, but even Miles Turner, like, attacking Holmgren, like, he tried to dunk on him at least two or three times in that game. So I think Carlisle was definitely saying, like, yo, y'all need to be more physical and let's not settle. And by not settling, to your point, maybe that opens up the floor a little bit more in the half court for Tyrese Haliburton to operate, because, I mean, he went, what, 9 for 17? You want to see Haliburton get 17 shots up. 4 for 8 from three. That's a very positive development. I'm curious if they can run that back again, or what adjustments defensively they're going to make to maybe shut that down. But, you know, if you're the Pacers, maybe that's the formula that you have to beat this Thunder team. You got to be more physical than them, but then also try to turn them over, which today they were able to do. I think that they'll take better control of the ball next game, though.
Yeah, I would think so as well. I mean, there's so many turnovers for OKC, and for people watching live on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up if you have not done so already, right below the video. Give us a thumbs up. It does help us out if you're doing that. Really appreciate it. And I think, you know, as Eric said in the chat, 41 shots in the paint in restricted area for Indiana. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'd imagine that's a series high. And this is after OKC was really shutting off the paint throughout the series, and did a hell of a job doing this in game three. So I look forward to watching it back and, you know, looking at every play more closely and seeing exactly what Indiana was doing or what OKC was not doing in this game as well. Like, we talked about Chet on the OKC side. Jalen Williams had a really good game. I thought, you know, maybe they should have even went to him a bit more. I felt like sometimes with OKC, Jalen Williams is on or off. This felt like an on game for him. He was getting to his spots wherever he wanted, getting to the rim, getting to his mid range. He seemed comfortable, and from 3-point range on the one he hit as well. So I would have liked to see a little bit more J-Dub. SGA, 9 of 20 in the game, 24 points. Wasn't his best game overall. And again, like, he seemed fatigued to me. We didn't see OKC score in the final, I think, 5 minutes and 57 seconds. They only hit one bucket. SGA, is that fatigue? Obviously, Indiana's defending him like crazy as well, with a number of guys throwing at him. But with SGA, he scored 30-plus in the first two games each. Like, I think he's got to hit 30. Would you agree with that? Like, you need SGA to be hitting 30 to win games against this Pacers offense.
I mean, I think at minimum, he's got to be taking more than three shots in the fourth quarter. So whether the 30 is the number or the volume of shots that he takes, if he's taking three shots in the fourth, you're not, I just don't see how you can close that out effectively. And, you know, I think that they did a better job of trying to keep him off balance, but, like, I thought SGA looked very comfortable going into the fourth quarter, and then he kind of just went quiet. So I don't know if that was just the momentum of Indiana's onslaught, or whether he just kind of faded to the background. But I was just very surprised that he wasn't more aggressive in that fourth quarter. But back to J-Dub, I think that that was the most decisive I think we've seen him. He didn't really shoot many threes. He was really operating a lot in the paint and in the mid range, which I thought he looked way more comfortable. So hopefully that's something that he's unlocked to kind of settle himself in and get more comfortable, because, you know, he was really struggling from the field and finding his shot in the first two games of the in the series. So I feel good for if I'm the Thunder that he got going. SGA still pretty much did his thing. Chet had a solid game, but he kind of disappeared in the second half. In terms of especially defensively.
He folded, man. Chet just vanished. He vanished. He had a great first half. I'm thinking, oh, wow, Chet's comfortable. Chet's figured it out. You know, Chet's back. And then, like, in the second half, it was Turner's, like, my all due respect to Miles Turner. He's a vet, but, like, Miles Turner isn't, like, the strongest or the toughest. And Chet look like a baby. He made him look like a baby.
Maybe that's the inexperience talking. And that's where, like, if you're the Thunder, who else is going to step up? So this is where it's got to be.
Is it inexperience, Dan? Is it all inexperience, or is it something up here because he choked on the two free throws earlier in the postseason against Denver? Is it like a mental block with him? His 3-point percentage fell off a cliff last year in the postseason. Granted, it's his rookie season. He's also not shooting as well this year in the postseason from three or from the free throw line. Could it be mental as well? I mean, like it's physical, and of course it's mental in the sense that, like, reading the game, speed of the game, postseason, and then skill level. He's still just a kid in the NBA. All of that's true. But, man, he missed a layup at the end of game one as well, like a layup that would have been a big shot. There's just been a lot of those moments with Chet this postseason, man, where I'm like, is he made for it? That's the question I find myself asking myself. And I know he's young. But that's just the way I feel. It's just the way I feel about it.
I think it's a fair assessment. I mean, that could just be the flaw that, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's gone through the injuries throughout his young career thus far. This is like a very heavy moment. He seemed pretty chill after game two. Maybe this was the, you know, the jitters of going into Indy, that home crowd, the pressure, 1-1 on the road. I don't know. Maybe it got to him a little bit, but the Thunder team has done a really good job of rebounding all year. So as much as I want to point to, oh, it was this thing, it was that thing, I think the Indiana Pacers just played lights out. And if they continue to do that, it's going to bear fruit. But I think that this is going to be, we're going to see a battle here, which is, as an NBA fan, that's all we really want, right? Like, we just want to see, as everyone's talking about ratings, yo, this has been great basketball. So let's just appreciate the fact that we're getting some great hoops from two really good teams.
Yeah, it was an awesome game. So many great moments in the game. The McConnell steal, Halliburton chasing down his own missed three-pointer, as of many others. It was an awesome game three. I had a lot of fun watching it, and it makes me even more looking forward to game four, to seeing what happens. Before we talk about some other stuff around the NBA, Dan, just want real quick. Pacers are up 2-1. You're still picking the Thunder in six, or are you moving off of that from your prediction for the remainder of the series?
Tell you what, man, we're sweating now, but I'm still sticking with Thunder in six.
In six? Wow. I think we're getting seven, and I think it's going to be one of those close games down the stretch. It's going to be an epic game. That's what I think. I think we're going to get seven, and that's my prediction at this point. I said it before the series. I picked the Thunder in five, but if the Pacers split in Oklahoma City, it's going to go deep. It's going to go seven. And that's the way I'm feeling right now. Dan, there's a lot of other stuff happening around the NBA, so I want to discuss that with you. On Tuesday, or what day is today? Today is the 11th. Whatever day. It's Wednesday. On Wednesday, we got more reporting around the future of Kevin Durant. Sham Charania over at ESPN said that Kevin Durant and his agent, Rich Kleinman, are now assessing his future and figuring out the best plan forward for him. And he cited the Rockets, the Spurs, the Wolves, the Heat, and the Knicks as the primary teams that are suitors for Kevin Durant or that are on his list as preferred destinations to go to. Of those teams, initially, I think the Knicks are unlikely to go for him. It's been reported out of New York today. Multiple reporters said the Knicks aren't pursuing KD. That's my impression as well. Maybe it's just, you know, smoke screens and they actually love him and they actually want him. But I don't think the Knicks route is completely realistic of those teams. The Spurs can clearly make the best offer and have the cleanest salaries to give in a deal. Where would you like to see him most end up, though, of those teams? The Rockets, the Spurs, the Wolves, the Heat, or the Knicks, of his preferred destinations?
I'm intrigued by Minnesota. If they decide, we'll see what Julius Randle decides to do. But I think that that would be a really cool merging of eras, being how much, you know, Anthony Edwards adores and idolizes KD. I think that would be cool. Just, and also where the state of their franchise is. I think that they're not that far away from potentially contending here after just going to the Western Conference Finals twice. So I think that that's probably the best if you're trying to go for ring hunting. I think the Spurs is interesting just because I would love to see what Wemby looks like with a bona fide score, one of the best scorers that this league has seen. And I think it just raises their floor tremendously to the point where I think that they would actually be a legitimate playoff contender. I don't know about championship, but they already got De'Aaron Fox there. You're not trading Stephon Castle. Like, I don't actually think that the draft capital or the assets to get KD would be that expensive for the Spurs, that they could have their core intact. They would be a very dangerous team. So I think I like the fit in the Spurs the most, but I think the Timberwolves is also pretty intriguing.
I think the Spurs would be my favorite of the teams because of how badly the Spurs need shooting. They badly need shooting. Yeah. And so KD would offer something instantly that I think enhances Victor Wembanyama, enhances their young core, regardless of what they do with the number two pick, likely drafting Dylan Harper, a point guard out of Rutgers, pairing him with Stephon Castle and De'Aaron Fox. I think the fit could be pretty beautiful and lead to some great immediate results in San Antonio, provided Victor stays healthy throughout the course of the season. But, you know, besides them, I think Minnesota would be awesome from like a story standpoint. I think him and Ant would be perfect together. Obviously, those two have a relationship from playing for Team USA, winning gold together. They really could have some great synergy on that team. And KD, I think, from a secondary shot creation standpoint, would fill a lot of holes for that team. And I know everybody talks about the need for a point guard for Minnesota, and that's true, but more than just quote-unquote, you know, traditional throwback point guard, you need a creator, a guy who can get a bucket for you, create a shot. And Kevin Durant, even at his age, can still do that post-Achilles injury. He's still a top 10, top 15 player in the NBA. I just don't think Minnesota's got the ammo for it. I just don't think they can get there with what Phoenix could likely get in return for KD, because I don't think this is going to just be cheap. I don't think it's going to be cheap. And the thing that people often don't talk about, and Shams had this in his piece, he said there have been wild card suitors that have made inquiries for Kevin Durant. That's interesting for a handful of reasons, because first of all, Kevin Durant may have his list, and that list may matter to an extent, because he could easily come out and say, I don't want to go to Golden State. That's what happened at the deadline, and the Golden State Warriors instead went for Jimmy Butler. But the Warriors had a backup plan. Like, they had the option to go get Jimmy Butler. They had something else they could do. They could have also just said, screw it, we're trading for you anyway, whether you want to be here or not. Well, that's what these wild card suitors can do. They can trade for KD and make an over-the-top offer and outbid what Minnesota could put out there with the Knicks or the Heat, what those teams could offer. And so that's where I'm pretty obsessed with who are the teams that are actually going to step up out of nowhere and trade for Kevin Durant. I have some fake trades for you, Dan, but before I get to those, I want to throw it to you. Like, who do you think should go for KD that's not on his list? What's the number one team on your mind? Who should go for Kevin Durant, this wild card suitor, whoever they are?
Wild card suitor. And see, the thing is that it's the draft capital that comes with it, or like the assets that you'd have to give up to get them. I think OKC is really interesting, partially for a reunion, but also because I'm like, yo, if you just have another score like KD on there, like that team seems, you're already as good as you are now, but I feel like you have the assets to go get them without giving up too much. I think Philly is kind of interesting because, I mean, they just need a 6, 8, 9, 10 guy to go get a bucket there. And who knows the health of Joel Embiid and when he's coming back. So I think that that would fit there. I just don't think they have the assets to go get him. I wouldn't be surprised if Boston made a call, especially considering that Derek White and Drew Holiday potentially, and even Jaylen Brown could be potentially available for trade. So I think every team kind of has a reason to like at least make an inquiry, right? Like it's Kevin Durant. He's not going to like hurt your team unless you have two other superstars that are making a ton of money that are getting overpaid. Well, only Bradley Beal's really getting overpaid. But, you know, I think the situations could make sense for a lot of different teams. But I'm curious to see who your dark horses are, though.
Well, none of yours. None of yours are on my list.
You got Memphis in there?
Well, Memphis is interesting. They're not on the list, but Memphis is interesting. I think to your point, KD can fit for a lot of teams. Like he might be 37 years old, but he's an elite shooter still. He's still a solid defensive player. Like KD can fit anywhere. First team on my list, the Philadelphia 76ers. Number one team on my list. My fake trade for them, Paul George and two first-round picks for Kevin Durant. Simple, clean, flip Paul George to Phoenix with two future first and get Kevin Durant back. It's a clear upgrade for the Sixers. And then for the Suns, you might say, well, why do you want Paul George? Why do you want George after the year he had? He's a diminished asset on a big salary. Well, you know, not if you refurbish his value in Phoenix. If he has a good year with the Suns next to Devin Booker, and then he becomes either a guy you want to keep or flip to get more picks in return. I think that's a good deal, especially for Philadelphia, because then you can still play around with the number three pick, trade down, whatever you want to do. And for Phoenix, it has some appeal, I think, considering George is still, in theory, a good player. In a low-pressure situation like Phoenix compared to what he's dealt with in Philadelphia, I'd be intrigued by that for the Phoenix side of things. But what do you think about it from the Philly side of things?
I mean, Philly... That's Philly. That's on the table. That's how Daryl Morey saves his job and all of the Philly fan base that hates him right now. That's an auto smash. I would take that trade. I don't think on the Phoenix side they're going to take that because I think that they saw what Paul George was. You're trying to make Devin Booker happy. There's a new coach regime there. I don't know what you're going to do with Bradley Beal. Like he's holding all the cards here. He doesn't want to give up his no trade clause. So I think it's going to cost more than Paul George and two first. But if not. If I'm the Sixers, I'm already making that call. That's a good trade. And it makes sense for both for them right now.
All right, my second team, the Orlando Magic. Jonathan Isaac, Cole Anthony works financially and two first. And maybe it ends up being more picks, but that's just, you know, for the sake of the deal. Cole Anthony, Jonathan Isaac, and two first for Kevin Durant. For Orlando, like to me, this is a no-brainer. Like you're one of the crappiest three-point shooting teams in the entire NBA. Kevin Durant immediately, dramatically improves that. Go get him. To me, that'd be a no-brainer for the Magic, especially for what you'd be giving up in a deal like that one. Do you like the idea, though, of a young Magic team that already has Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero, 2 6'10" shot creators? Yeah. Is KD possibly too redundant in that sense, or are you still doing it anyway because of the shooting ability that KD provides?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking of what would that lineup look like, but I think you just fit KD in there. That'll be just fine for the length for sure. The deal, no way that the Suns take that. Like that's just not enough compensation. Like I don't want Cole Anthony and Jonathan Isaac. However, if I'm the Orlando Magic, that's the type of things that I'm thinking about because you desperately need shooting 3-point shooting. I think they probably need a guard more, like a true point guard. I think Jalen Suggs is vastly underrated. But like what that team was when he was active and healthy defensively and just what he brings to them, I would say that I think if I'm the Suns, I would ask for Jalen Suggs in the return for that trade. But if I'm Orlando, I would say, no, it's not worth giving him up. But Durant is the right, that's the right direction. You need some shooting and you need a guard. So if he's available, make an offer, just not Jalen Suggs.
I did a little digging today, like who are these sleeper teams? Who are these under the radar teams for Kevin Durant? And the one team that keeps coming up that has likely already made an offer, the Toronto Raptors. It does seem like the Raptors have already made a pursuit of Kevin Durant. KD does not want to go there. They are not on his list. But, you know, like they have a ton of salaries that they could put together. They have RJ Barrett. They have Emmanuel Quickly. They got so many different configurations that you could put together. One of them would be Quickly and Poeltl. That's a very clean salary match for Kevin Durant. If you add on two first to that, those Raptors first could be pretty valuable because they're no guarantee to be anything special. That might be a more desperate move if they were to go get Kevin Durant at his age. Do you think Toronto should be trying to hit the accelerator here and going for some of these veterans, Dan, or is that a mistake and they should keep building slow with their youth?
I mean, are they still building slow with their youth after getting Brandon Ingram? I was like, what was that? Why did you even? That's like the longest sprained ankle that we never heard anything about the rest of the season. They have the assets to go get KD. I just feel like KD would have to have done the Suns super dirty for him to be shipped out to Toronto. Like, I feel like that's probably like one of the last places he'd want to be. And I don't know KD, but I'm just assuming. From all the things that I've read about other players and their disdain for one to play in Toronto, like, I don't think that's the place he wants to be. But they got salary and they have viable veterans that they could send back in the trade. So if Toronto wants to listen to it, I think they should absolutely entertain it. I actually thought that Toronto, if Giannis became available, I thought that that would be the guy that they would really be going for. But KD's definitely a solid number two. Hey,
why not both?
That's interesting.
I'm just saying, why not both? Why not?
Hey,
dude, hey, Scotty.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. For Giannis,
Scotty,
yeah.
And picks,
yeah,
to Milwaukee, and then trade picks and salaries for Kevin Durant, and you got Giannis and KD and Brandon Ingram and whatever else is left over. Like, the team be interesting, really interesting, right?
At least it's the Eastern Conference, so you know you kind of got a shot. I mean, if I'm either any free agent that has a choice to go anywhere, I feel like you got to go to the East because you pretty much have that's not a free square, but not having to deal with Boston and what they should be at their peak right now is a huge advantage for being in the Eastern Conference.
Well, that's the thing, Dan, right? Like, I've been thinking a lot about the 07 Celtics. They were garbage. They lost 19 games. They had the second worst record in the NBA. They were supposed to end up with Kevin Durant, ironically, or Greg Oden, and they didn't. They fell in the draft at the fifth pick, ended up being Jeff Green, who they flipped for Ray Allen. And a month later, they trade for Kevin Garnett. And a year later, they're hoisting Banner 17. They went from worst to first. The Eastern Conference at that time was crap. The Pistons were near the end of their run. The Cavs had just made the finals and faced off against the Spurs and got swept. LeBron wasn't yet at his peak. He had a bunch of journeymen on the roster with him. That is not too dissimilar to today. I don't want to diminish the Pacers or the Cavs or some of these, you know, teams at the top of the Eastern Conference, but it's very shallow. It's a shallow conference. That the bottom of the conference is full of, you know, just playoff doormats, teams that are going to be rebuilding or tanking next year. The East stinks, okay? So for a lot of these teams we're talking about, you know, the idea of the Raptors going for it, like if you get KD and or Giannis, like you're suddenly a top seed. If you're the Sixers and you're making these aggressive plays, you're right back up there as long as Embiid's healthy. If you're the Magic and you're in the middle and you solve some of your flaws, your shooting, suddenly you might be at the top of the Eastern Conference. And the last team that I have in mind for Kevin Durant falls into that boat as well. The Detroit Pistons. They can easily get to the money required to go get Kevin Durant. Tobias Harris and Fontecchio. Ooh. His expiring $8 million salary, and then you waive a bunch of cap holds. Tim Hardaway, see you later. Dennis Schroeder, goodbye. You keep Malik Beasley. You trade Harris, Fontecchio, and some number of first-round picks, and go get Kevin Durant, and you pair him with Cade Cunningham. You pair him with Jaden Ivey coming back, and Jalen Duren, and Asar Thompson, and Ron Holland, and another year of experience under his belt, and Malik Beasley back. That team is damn good, right? So this is the state of the Eastern Conference right now, where to me, teams should be aggressive. They should go for it and make acquisitions like the Pacers did going to get Pascal Siakam. Because guess what? You might find yourself in the East Finals one year and then in the NBA Finals the next, up 2-1 with a chance to win it all. That's the state of the East right now. So these teams should be aggressive and going for it, and the Pistons are one of them.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I think that's Flames. I think that that's probably one of the best landing spots for him, just because I think Cade, that's what he's missing. He's missing that number two, that can go win you a series like that. Having KD in the situation of going against the Knicks in that first round, I think we see a different outcome. And I love the, like, Tobias Harris is fine. He's fine. He's whatever. But I think packaging him with, you know, Fontecchio's contract, maybe throwing some other fluff with a couple, with multiple firsts. Yeah, I like the Durant fit in Detroit a lot, actually. It's an ascending team.
We got a little pushback in the chat. For Aiden in the chat said, I like the Pistons to stay young and get a younger forward like Jabari Smith. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to the podcast probably feel the same way. Like, why go get 37-year-old Kevin Durant? I think it's just a matter of philosophy. Do you want to play slow or do you want to play fast? And to me, if I'm the Pistons, the window is wide open right now. The window's open. It may not be open for long. Who knows what's going to end up happening with Cade Cunningham? Like, health happens, things change, the state of the conference changes. There could be a juggernaut that emerges in the Eastern Conference where it's like you're not getting through LeBron and the Cavs or LeBron and the Heat for years. They're going to represent the finals. You don't know how the landscape of the league will change. And to me, the window is open for the 25-26 NBA season. And it might also be open for the 26-27 season. And so I think these teams should be going all in these 2 years trying to win the NBA Finals and the Eastern Conference. That's where I land. And like, this is coming from me, Dan. I've long been like the blow it up guy. I've always been about these teams have no chance to win the finals. They should blow it up. Well, that's because that was the state of the league at the time. The Toronto Raptors held on too long to some of their guys, and then they ended up going for it at the right moment. It ended up working out for them. The Chicago Bulls held on too long, and they got piss poor value back for their guys. It can go either way. Like, you can play it any way you want to. And I think now we're in a state of the Eastern Conference where it's wide open and teams should be going for it right now. And just like the Pacers did, they went on and got Pascal Siakam. It wasn't a trade universally loved by people at the time, but Siakam has even gotten better with Indiana. He's shooting the ball better than he ever has. I think in part because of the guys delivering him just pinpoint bullseye passes, Halliburton and McConnell. But the guy was already a champion. He very well might be a champion again in a completely different context. He's a new player than he was when he was a young player in Toronto. I think team's going to go for it, man. I really do, Dan. I think they got to go for it.
Time out. Did you tell me the chat is saying that they would rather keep Tobias Harris than trade for Kevin Durant?
Well, like, I mean, what? Aiden was just saying.
Come on, man. What are we talking about, bro?
Aiden didn't say he wanted to keep Tobias Harris. He said he'd rather get a young forward like Jabari Smith. Which for what? Fair. Like, if you want to be young, sure. But
that team has so much youth. Like, Jaden Ivey was hurt all year. Young. Let him come back. Yeah, like, you still got pieces around here. Asar Thompson, ascending two-way wing here. I mean, you got options. Go get KD in there. Get a veteran presence that can give you 50, 40, 90, and also play some defense, and also will be clutch in the final moments. Whereas Tobias Harris just kind of just disappears whenever the game's on the line or you need him to actually do something positive for you in a pressure situation. So, yeah, Jalen Duren, super young. Isaiah Stewart, I think you got to keep him there if you can. Yeah, bro, why would you not want KD in that situation? That's like – I see your vision. I'm like, yo, that's like the perfect scenario. If I'm Detroit, I'm offering up whatever veteran salary I got on the books. Give them a couple multiple firsts. Have a nice day. Let's go run this in Detroit.
An interesting comment by Eric in the chat. He mentions the Pacers as a team that could still be aggressive in the trade market if they wanted to because of Jairus Walker and Benedict Mathurin. Mathurin, who will be a restricted free agent this offseason. Like, the Pacers do have some quality young guys on their team if they wanted to package them together or send one to the other team to get even better. If there's somebody that made sense, and obviously Indiana has valued continuity with the majority of their roster, but it is interesting to think about how just because you're at the top doesn't mean you can't make trades to further improve your team. So I think for the Eastern Conference, we could see a lot of movement. At a minimum, we're going to see teams being very aggressive, and that's in part because of the state of the Boston Celtics. We already know Jason Tatum tore his Achilles. He is out for possibly all of next season. It seems like that's the likelihood with him. And then Jaylen Brown, it was announced today that he underwent arthroscopic knee surgery for a meniscus injury. He's expected to be ready by training camp, but your two best players now have underwent surgery this offseason. Never a good thing when you're seeing hospital photos of these guys with casts on their legs. That's not what you want to see. Now, one of the things, I was on NBC Sports Boston today. There's like this Celtics, the offseason show that I'm doing with Drew Carter and Chris Forsberg. And we were talking about the Jaylen Brown injury today. And the topic came up, does this increase or decrease the possibility of a deal, the fact he underwent surgery? And Chris Forsberg, who is very connected in Boston and, you know, very insightful Celtics writer, he brought up the point that I thought was kind of smart. Brown, this is a surgery that's so routine nowadays for players that another team might feel like, oh, wow, this knee issue that we were worried about during the postseason, all solved, like he's all good now, that it could increase another team's vision for what Jaylen Brown could look like in their own ecosystem, where therefore maybe they would make an even greater offer for Jaylen Brown than they otherwise would have when there was just uncertainty about his status with his knees. So that's just the thought I wanted to throw out there to you, Dan, because I'm curious about your thoughts. Do you think this increases or decreases the chances of Boston receiving just this acceptable offer for Jaylen Brown, where you just can't say no from somebody out there?
I think that Jaylen Brown's a very smart dude, and I think he knows the way this market may play. I think it made sense for him to get this surgery now. Even if he's expected to be ready by the regular season, by him getting it now, I think there's that window of opportunity of this is going to be a crazy offseason. So anything I feel like is on the table. I think that Boston's going to be listening to Jaylen Brown offers, and he is their most valued asset right now. That is Jason Tatum. I don't think Jason Tatum's on the market. So you're looking at Jaylen Brown. Then you got Kristaps Porzingis. Then you got Derek White. Then Drew Holiday. That's the pecking order. So if teams are inquiring about Jaylen Brown, it's going to cost something, especially now that he's leaning towards there's no mystery about this health or what might be going on. He got it corrected. I think it was the right move for him to get the surgery now. I think that's only going to help the Celtics in their bargaining chips if they want to potentially trade for him. And the Celtics have always generally been good about getting adequate compensation for their stars. So I don't know. We'll see. I was actually surprised to see Derek White's name on there, because I think he's been the catalyst to me of this team. That's like, you have two stars there, but you need someone to complement Tatum and give you the defense and the three-point shooting, the off-ball secondary playmaking at times. He's just a jack of all trades. So, like, to me, I think he's more important that I wouldn't be receiving offers from him unless it was something very significant. I think I'd actually probably be more likely to listen to a deal for Brown than I would Derek White.
Well, the interesting thing is, so earlier in the week, I reported on my podcast here that the Celtics are open to listening to offers for everybody but Tatum. And then today, Shams Charania went on Pat McAfee, and he elaborated a bit on that and talked about how Boston has received offers for Jaylen Brown and Derek White, but their preference is to not trade those guys, obviously, like no da. Yeah, their preference is to trade Drew Holiday or Kristaps Porzingis. That's the route, or the Sam Hauser route. That's where Boston wants to go. Now, here's the thing though, Dan. Like, it takes two to tango. There's no guarantee that you're going to get offers for KP, who just has some mysterious illness.
We don't know.
That nobody knows about. Like, or Drew Holiday that has 3 years and $104 million remaining on his contract and is about to be 35 years old. There's no guarantees you get offers for Drew Holiday that are worth accepting. but you might get offers that are worth accepting for Jaylen Brown, who is a known commodity, who's still in the prime of his career and may not even be at his peak of his career. You might get the acceptable offers for Derek White, who has gotten better every single season of his career, and maybe there's even more untapped potential for him if you gave him a little bit more pick and roll. So that's where I think a lot about that, and it's like, well, where are the offers coming? Who are the offers being made for? You might want to trade Kristaps or Drew Holiday, but there might be nothing that you deem as acceptable. That's just the reality of it. And so that's where with Boston, I don't want to say they're going to trade Brown or White, because I don't think they want to trade Brown or White, but I think those are where the best value offers are going to come, because somebody's going to miss out on Giannis that is dreaming of Giannis right now. Somebody's going to miss out on Kevin Durant that's dreaming of KD right now. There's somebody out there that's hoping for a sign and trade with a restricted guy, or they're trying to pry loose a guy we're not even talking about, and they're not going to get him. And then they're going to say, you know what, screw it. We'll give you those two extra first round draft picks and we'll make them unprotected. We'll just do it. We'll do it because we want Jaylen Brown. There's going to be a team out there that I think is going to make that a desperate offer. It's just a matter of if Boston actually says yes or not.
Houston?
Yeah, like Houston's a perfect team because Ime Udoka, him and Jaylen Brown are tight. Like, I think if Boston sends Jaylen anywhere, they're not going to send him to some sad franchise that's not winning anything. I think that they're going to do right by Jaylen and would send him to a team that feels like there's actually a chance in a place that he'd want to be. And to me, Houston is like quite obviously like top of that list on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that would be that's also like adequate compensation. Like you have a slew of really good players to choose from. They got picks for days. That's the team I'll be talking to if I'm Boston, if you want to try to make a deal done. I don't think they're actively looking at it, but like if Houston starts taking calls, like that's my first move, because I think that they could really get an adequate haul for Jaylen Brown. That would, when Tatum is healthy, that could be a pretty interesting, really interesting team and roster construction.
Oh, I mean, look, Houston has the 10th pick in the draft. They can trade 5 future firsts. That's not even counting swaps. It's not factoring in that they could have young players who are expendable on their side of things. Like Jabari Smith was mentioned earlier. If they want to give Jabari Smith, they could give Jabari Smith as part of a package. Like they have a lot of ways to get to an offer that at least forces Boston to have a meeting. And so Houston is like number one on my list of, you know, the potential destinations. I think San Antonio is very, very intriguing as well. I don't love the fit for the Spurs quite as much, but I think Houston would be pretty ideal. And so it's going to be interesting, man. Like same thing with Derek White. My former colleague Logan Murdoch a couple weeks back reported that the Warriors really like Derek White. So like Golden State has picked the deal. They've already gone for Jimmy Butler. I'd imagine they'll try to double down. Like I don't think they're going to move away from trying to contend. The Warriors, they must be watching these playoffs right now thinking, damn, we were a Steph Curry injury away from number 5. That must be what the Warriors are thinking right now, right? Yeah. Like they have to be, because they saw the Thunder vulnerable against the Nuggets, a veteran team. They're probably thinking, we could have beat them. We could match the speed and intensity of the Pacers. That's probably what the Warriors are thinking right now.
I love a Derek White fit there, but I'm also like, they really need someone else in that front court, but maybe they can go a little bit cheaper, big on in the trade market there. But if I'm the Warriors, like, yeah, you're not that far away. It's just a matter of like, can you figure out some situation for Kuminga? Maybe you get some, I don't know what the trade market for him really is right now. But I do think that there's room for, I mean, honestly, I don't know why they were so reluctant to trade Brandon Podziemski. He's a solid player, but I'm like, you guys had some younger assets you were protecting a little bit too much that I feel like they probably could have made that move last time. So this offseason is going to be really important for them to kind of extend that window, because Draymond's not getting any younger. Steph is still playing lights out for his age, but you know, I don't know how much longer you can count on that, especially the way Jimmy Butler just didn't really have it, you know, those final few games of that first series in that series against Minnesota. So they need something else, and we'll see what they do this offseason. But I wouldn't be surprised if they're active in the trade market.
yeah, Jimmy wasn't enough, unfortunately, but like they still have the ammo to get more because they got Jimmy for so cheap. So we'll see what the Warriors do. We'll see what the Celtics ends up doing. There was some Knicks news that we got to talk about, Dan, to close out today's show. The Knicks, well, they requested an interview virtually every single NBA head coach currently under contract. They requested to interview Jason Kidd. Mavericks rejected. They requested to interview Chris Finch. The Wolves rejected. They requested Ime Udoka. The Rockets rejected. They requested Quinn Snyder. The Hawks rejected. Who's next? Are we going to hear Eric Spoelstra? Are we going to hear J.J. Redick?
Bro.
Who's next?
Was it a joke? Did they really ask Billy Donovan? It must have been a joke. Because that's where we're at. They're just literally scanning the whole league, like shooting their shot. Like, yo, let me talk to you. No, I'm good, bro.
I kind of respect it. I mean, I know a lot of people are saying it's they had no plan. They fired Tibbs. They have no plan. Oh, so yes, yeah. Casey Johnson and Chicago.
Bro, but that's like scraping the barrel, man. That's like reckless Tinder swiping there. Like, I mean, Billy Donovan's a good coach, but like, I mean, come on, man. We're Chicago? Chicago, that's going to change your trajectory of a Eastern Conference Finals team. Get out of here, man.
What's that dating site where people cheat on their spouses? It's that site. All these coaches are engaged. You know what I'm saying? All these coaches got a contract. You're going for taking coaches. You know.
Ashley Madison,
that's the name. Yeah, exactly. That's from 2002 or something like that. Yeah. 20 years ago. Yeah, the early years of the internet.
right. But like, I get like, you know, at this point, yeah, you fired Tim. So it's like, let me go shoot my shot with everybody that I possibly can. But I'm like, at some point, it's going to be like, all right, let me narrow down and think about which options that are actually available makes sense. And I don't know if anyone else would feel slighted that, you know, the fact that the Knicks are just going out asking everybody, yo, can you be my coach? I don't know if they feel like they're getting like, you know, bested or like you're like second rate or like, nah, you're like on our D list or whatever. But I don't know. At some point, they're going to have to get serious about this and be like, yo, Mike Malone, what up? You know, Taylor Jenkins, what's going on? Like, get the people, Mike Bullenhoser, like those guys that are actually good coaches, championship experience, playoff experience that can actually be options for. Because, like, I don't know, they're trying to break Jake right out of retirement. Like, all right, y'all, we got it.
Well, a couple thoughts on this. One, just because the team has rejected doesn't mean that the coach doesn't have interest. So, in theory, this could be the team rejecting for trade leverage because they would want more back from the Knicks in order to give up whoever the coach is. Now, we'll see how that all plays out. Seems like a lot of these coaches are in situations that they would be incredibly happy with where they are, and I can't imagine them wanting to change. Secondly, John in the chat said, keep your eyes on Steve Nash. The podcast, The Coaching Pipeline, is real. I think it's interesting.
I feel that.
I do think it's interesting to think about certain media members after we did see J.J. Redick get hired. Why not, you know, explore Tim Legler, right? Like, why not explore Tim Legler? Interview him at least. I'm intrigued by Tim Legler's potential.
I would love as an NBA as a head coach, man.
Yeah, he's such a great basketball mind. I'd hate to lose him out of sports media, just like, you know, we lost J.J. Redick with his outstanding podcast. But I think the Knicks, the reason why I'm not criticizing their approach here, like a lot of people in New York are right now, it feels like, because there's no clear plan, to me, I think that's okay. I think it's okay that they're throwing out a tons of different lines with this reckless swiping, as you said, where it's like they're just finding out every single corner, the coaches under contract, the people who are under the radar, they're feeling out everything to see the possibilities. With that said, though, a lot of people out of New York speculate that they're just going to hire their former assistant, Johnny Bryant, who interviewed for the Suns head coaching job, didn't get it. He is a lead assistant now for the Cavaliers under Kenny Atkinson there this past year. So, look, man, like if they get Johnny Bryant, there's some familiarity there with him. He could probably keep some of the existing coaching staff, and he's a first-year head coach who, you know, there's upside there. So I think Johnny Bryant would be an interesting hire, but in the meantime, I do think it's fine what the Knicks have been doing by looking everywhere at all their different options to figure out who their next head coach will be. But we'll see, Dan. We'll see how this all plays out. Ultimately, the uncertainty with the Knicks, the injury to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and what their what trades they might end up making. The East is open. There's a lot of uncertainty in that conference. All we know right now is that the Pacers are up 2-1 in the NBA Finals. Two more games to go with a game four coming up on Friday night. And on Friday, I'll be live in the Yahoo Sports app. On Yahoo Sports app, the same app you use for fantasy, the Yahoo Sports app, I'll be in the discussions button in there. Just click the discussions button where I'll be chatting live AMA during Pacers Thunder in the Yahoo Sports app. So give that a download and chat with me on Friday. And we'll also be live again on Friday night on YouTube, X, TikTok, and Facebook Live after Game 4 with Tom Haverstraw on Friday. But tonight, Dan, we saw a great basketball game. I had a great time watching it. I had a great time podcasting with you. I appreciate you joining me tonight.
Always a pleasure, KOC. Thanks, man.
Big thanks to Dan Titus for joining me on today's episode. Thanks to the whole team for producing us on this late Wednesday night. We'll be back again on Friday after the game with me and Tom Haverstraw talking about NBA Finals Game 4. Looking forward to it. Have a good week. We'll talk to you on Friday.